Welcome to another edition of the Armchair Directors, where each episode we take a look at one of cinema's great directors and their essential films. This week on the show, we are looking at German director Tom Teichwer and his 1998 classic Run, Lola, Run. Returning on the show today to talk about Run, Lola, Run is Professor Marie Westhaver. Professor Westhaver, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me.
So this is like a really like an adrenaline movie. Like in a way, it's sort of a little bit similar to Mad Max Fury Road, where it's just like you're just the heart's beating. It's intense movie. There's no real like time to take a break or take a breather, because it's always she's got that short time frame. She's got to find a way to get this insane amount of money in a short amount of time, or else people are going to die. And it's just really well done, I think.
I agree, and I'm glad you brought that up, because it's one of the strengths of the movie is how it does put you in your body, and it uses so many senses. Mm-hmm. You know, there's so much going on visually. There's so much going on with the music, mm-hmm. and even with the sense of touch. Mm-hmm. Because every time she bumps into someone, you know, you get a little flash yeah. forward. So he brings a lot of senses into his movie, which he does in all of his stuff.
Yeah, and what also I think really fits well for this film is its short runtime. Like, it's an hour and 20 minutes, but take away the credits, it's like an hour 15. Mm-hmm. And I think that's just really good. There's no beating around the bush, because she's only got 20 minutes to fill her time, and she's got these three different scenarios of what happened to her, and it's perfectly at that time. If you made this, like, if you stretch it down to 2 hours, it would drag, it would take too long. Like, say they spent too much time on the drama with her dad and his mistress, and they spent too much time on that, it would get boring, and it wouldn't be the film it is.
I agree. Yeah, I think the short runtime gives it that sense of immediacy.
Mm-hmm. And just once again, he's just throwing everything out there. Like you said, he's got the, you know, the very 90s European techno music going on, which is very, you know, mm-hmm. it's very fast paced. And then it's got, you know, it's got like the animated sequences too, when she's running down the stairway. And then there's the scenario with the bully kid and his, you know, his rabid dog. Mm-hmm. You know, does he trip her? Does the dog try to bite her? Or can she just hop over him, you know? So yeah, he's just doing so many things in this movie, just throwing so many things out there. And I think that's one of the reasons why this film works so well.
Yeah, and he shoots it in sort of a different way, because you see her running, and then he does these aerial shots. And since she has this bright red hair, no matter where he puts mm-hmm. the camera, you can see her.
She sticks out like a sore thumb.
She's got red hair and she's running. You mm-hmm. can't miss her. So it's a nice trick.
Yeah, and it's. One thing it's interesting I found about this film, I wonder if I'm the only one that's really talked about this, but the actual film, it's some of it shot, a lot of it's shot in film, but like there's these little scenarios that looks like it's shot on video. Like when it keeps going back to the argument her dad is having with the mistress woman, mm-hmm. that's shot on video. And then even the segments like when the banker friend of his dad, who she runs into with the car, and it's like he gets into the accident with the gangsters. And then that looks like it's shot on video. And even this scene when we run into the homeless man who stole the money, and, you know, he's just having so much fun buying everybody food at the little convenience store thing. It's like it's shot on video. What was your opinion on that?
You know, I never noticed that, but now I'm going to have to go back and look and see if I do.
Yeah, because most of it's shot on film. Whenever she's running and everything, that's film. That's just regular shot on film. But there's, you know, it looks like it's shot on video. And I just kind of wondered.
I wonder why they would do that.
Yeah. I mean, one theory I could have, because this film is a lot, one thing you can say of this film is like a video game. You know, you failed the first level, try it again. You failed the second level, try it again. Third one, you got it right. You know, you win the game, move on to the next level, everything. Well, in a lot of video games, then you're doing a big story thing. There's always like these little, like when you pass a level or whatever, there's in between before you get to the next level, there's like a little short little video. So like your character, after he pulls off this task, you talk to this other character, blah, blah, blah. Boom, something happens in that little video that affects how you're going to have to play the next level. And I think maybe with those little scenes that were shot on video, my theory is, like, how is that going to affect her now? All right, Lola, now because they're having this little argument, how is that going to affect you in trying to get the 100,000 marks? Maybe that's just me.
I think that's a very good theory. I think thinking of it as a video game actually makes more sense, because one of the things that I always think is funny every time I see it is, if my friend called me and said that they needed, you know, any amount of money, in 20 minutes. It would take me 20 minutes to get in my car and drive to the bank to rob it and then get to the friend. You know, the whole idea that she runs every time, it's mm-hmm. bizarre. But you get a nice overview of downtown Berlin.
Oh, yeah. When you kind of, once again, where we talked previously with Life is Beautiful and that cinematography, this is also a beautifully shot movie. Just the way she's running, and there's just all the different little shots they do. When one scene when she's running across the little courtyard area at the apartment complex she lives in, it keeps going out, out, mm-hmm. out. And it's like and we see the patterns of the courtyard, and it's all these squares together. And, you know, it kind of fits into all this, like, different scenarios. Like, maybe one square is one scenario, what she does with this, or another scenario. It really adds well, and just the way, and, like, with the banking and everything, and the way it follows her running, I thought it's really well shot movie.
And they put a lot of red in her scenes, and they put a lot of yellow in Manny's scenes, so they each have their own color, which is sort of reinforced subliminally.
Mm-hmm.
He does a lot of things with sensory information.
Yeah, and even the scenes that play out when they're in bed together and they're talking about, you know, what would you do, you know, what would you do if I died, mm-hmm. or, you know, she's asking, how do you know that I'm the one for you? What if, like, I'm the one out of all the other women in the world? And, you know, it's sort of in that really, like, bright, kind of drenching red, mm-hmm. and they're all surrounded in it.
Which is a strange and interesting choice in terms of a filter, because all the rest of the time, Lola has this bright red hair that stands out, but they put the red filter on and everything's red.
Yeah.
And suddenly she's just another German blonde.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, the editing is also, cinematography, the editing, I think, is also really stands out. The movie, it's got, I looked at it, the statistics that they showed it on IMDb, they said averaging out all the cuts and transitions and all that in the film, at roughly, it's a cut every 2.7 seconds in the movie.
Wow. Yeah. I have a list of all those kinds of stats, because mm-hmm. it is kind of impressive. The film contains 1,581 transitions, mm-hmm. edits, dissolves, fades, wipes, in 71 minutes of action, excluding the credits, which creates an average shot length about 2.7 seconds. But it does slow down at the end, where most contemporary films speed up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and just the one of the great parts of editing, which I'll kind of crack up at, it's when it's the original first scenario, and she's trying to figure out, well, who do I go to get mm-hmm. the money? And she's just like going, you can see it. It's like she's thinking it out, and she's like going through all her friends. No, 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 dad. No, 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 dad. No, 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 dad. It keeps going back to her dad, 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 dad. And she goes out, and then it sticks on the picture of the dad, and the dad's looking at her, and he just nods his head saying no.
Shakes his head like, yeah, not a good plan.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you have more information than she does each time.
Yeah, and it's one of the things that also kind of, going back to what you said earlier, was the music in the film. And it kind of has that 90s European pop feel that you mm-hmm. saw in a lot of 90s European movies. And the one way the music, not the stories don't feel similar, but the music is like Trainspotting. Like mm-hmm. Trainspotting has that, you know, they're always going to clubs. They're always having that techno music that playing.
Thumping kind of.
Yeah. And both movies use that. And I think very similar, I think, in music style.
That's Franka Potente doing the vocals in the background.
Oh, with the I Wish I Was a mm-hmm. Hunter song?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then just the film was always so interesting to me. I like about it is the theme of chance. Like, you know, it almost plays like a choose-your-own-adventure book. And it's just also just how you talked about earlier, just how, like, the minor little things, everything she does affects somebody.
Yes.
Like, how she interacts with that woman pushing the baby stroller, you know. You know, she bumps in her a little bit, and she turns into, like, a baby napper. She bumps into her more. She like, wins the lottery. Or she, like, she doesn't even bump into her at all. She turns into a nun. And it's just funny how, like, all those just little contacts she has with people.
But interestingly, especially that lady, she's the same nasty person for each scenario,
yeah.
whether she ends up being arrested for being the baby napper or wins the lottery.
Mm-hmm.
She's the same person. And the one thing that remains the same is the beginning with her mother. You know, she runs out of the apartment, and all three times her mother has the exact same conversation on the phone.
That
so
was
her mother's static.
That's her mother?
That's her mother.
Oh,
saying, do you
okay.
need shampoo? Because I'm going out, and then she's telling somebody on the phone, well, yeah, I know, but he's married too, and whatever. And that is the identical, that remains identical.
Yeah, that's always the same. That was her mom.
That was her mom.
I thought that was, for all the time I watched, I just assumed that was like one of her mates at the apartment or something, friends at the apartment. Okay. And it almost feels like she kind of remembers the different scenarios. Like the main thing is with the gun safety. When the first time when Manny's desperate, so he decides to hold up the grocery store and he gives her the gun. He says, make sure the safety's off. She doesn't know what to do. And the trigger goes off and it almost she just barely misses the security guard. The second time when she's holding up the bank, she remembers to take the safety off. Then she points it at the guy and nothing bad happens. So it's almost like she remembers it. And then one scene, she didn't say this, but the security guard, at the third time when, she got there too late, and he goes, oh, you finally came here. It's almost like...
And then he looks a little confused, like, wait, what did I mean by that?
Yeah, yeah.
I like that part of it because to me it feels like all those unexplained things, in life that... Deja vu, you feel like you've been there before, but you know you haven't, or you know something you shouldn't know, or maybe you knew it all along. I think it kind of explains that feeling we all have.
Yeah, it kind of, once again, it sort of goes back to the fear where it feels like a video game, where you failed the first time, you're like, okay, well, I'm remember not to go to that place or something, because I'll lose my life or get killed as my character will get killed. So you remember to sidestep that, or I got to hit the bad guy here or whatever.
Well, poor Herr Meyer, no matter what happens, he's getting in that wreck. Mm-hmm. And those guys are getting out of the car.
Yeah, that's funny because the third one, he finally gets out of that wreck, but instead he just gets into another one.
Now, if you notice, the guy that they run over is the guy who stole the moped. So that's another example of somebody's finally getting their comeuppance, but it takes the third iteration. And in the end, the last scene where the last version where she's she gets in the ambulance with the the security guard, there's a healing with touch, again with
once
the touch.
Again, how she affects everybody.
And the sudden awareness of, where he belongs in her life, which is sort of strange because she doesn't realize it, but she just lost her dad in a car crash.
Yeah. I don't know if about you, but the first time I watched that movie, I had this when during that scene when he's having the heart attack but she holds his hand and he's better, I almost got the feeling that that's her dad.
There was actually a discussion about that in my class the first time I showed it. Yeah, and I had to actually freeze the frame and show, see, he's wearing these clothes, that's her dad's wearing a suit, there is something very paternal. And you wonder, although the dad says that her real father didn't live to see her.
Oh, okay.
So you know that he's gone, but it does make you wonder, well, wait a minute, maybe it's this guy.
Yeah, and the way he kind of talks to her and everything, it's sort of like a father to a daughter. He calls, well, my little princess is here, and that kind of thing. And, also it does, once again, I remember a long time ago when we talked about Vertigo, I brought up Run, Lola, Run at the very end, sort of the connections there, and there's a little bit of Hitchcock here. There's, like the animated sequence that has this never-ending spiral of staircases, which the spirals in Vertigo were the big thing. And speaking of Vertigo, there was in the casino when she wins the money at the end, there's a painting of Kim Novak from behind, which is sort of like the painting in Vertigo, but of
Carlotta.
Carlotta, yes.
Yes, because it's all about that whorl in the... in her hairdo. Yeah, Ticker didn't like that empty space on the back wall at the casino, so he asked his production designer to paint something there. And they were using all these Hitchcock, Vertigo things that, the spiral theme is repeated over and over. So the it is kind of a nice moment when you see that picture. It's like, oh, yeah, that's the Kim Novak picture. It's really there for Hitchcock.
And I remember reading, it was in the IMDb trivia, was that... That he didn't have like a frame of reference or anything. He didn't remember what Kim Novak looked like or something in the film. And so that was just all like freehand, basically.
Right, let's just do it from behind. Yeah. Yes, I remember the hair. That supermarket that they rob in the first episode, it took them a month to talk them into it.
That.
But then they were really happy about it because the movie did really well and they got a little bit of fame. Yes, this is where the heist happened.
Yeah, and I think also just Franca Potente or Potent?
Potent, I think.
Potent. This is the film that sort of made her a star because I've seen her in a few things now. She was in most famously The Bourne Identity. She was in a couple episodes of House, one of the more critical acclaimed ones when he goes through a mental hospital to deal with his Vicodin addiction.
Oh, that's right.
And then she I don't know if you've seen this new show on FX. It was called Taboo with Tom Hardy, kind of like this like Victorian area London thing. And she's sort of, her name is Helga, and she's sort of, you know, in sort of the grimy areas of London. And it's, you know, she kind of plays that character again.
Okay.
And I think this film is, you know, like you said, about how it got so famous. I think this is like one of the biggest films in like German history, I think.
Well, it has the advantage of being short, so people don't feel like, it's not like it goes on and on with its philosophical ideas and beats you over the head with it. It's a fun movie.
Yeah. And I think you talked about how you showed it in class and everybody loves it. I think, once again, this is a film where you could show, like, in like an, say, intro to cinema course. Mm-hmm. Just like if you say, oh, you've never seen a foreign film, here's Run Lola Run. Because it's just, it's quick. Like, you know, even if you don't like it, it's quick. You don't waste a lot of time. And it's got that fast pace. It's a story easily be able to follow along with. And it doesn't, like, beat you over the head with its, like, philosophical themes of chance or free will or anything like that. But I think that's what's so good about it. Everyone can enjoy it.
But all those things still come through, I think.
Exactly, yes.
Without pressing the point too hard.
Hmm. And so I did want to bring this out there. We talked a little bit earlier just before we started recording. I was reading about this. There was a similarity to a Polish film called Blind Chess, and I know you haven't seen it. And I was reading about it. It has these three different scenarios, but it's not like where somebody's got to get this amount of money. It's a guy that's trying to make he's at a train station, and he's, for some reason, he's running a little bit late, so he tries to run to catch it. And it's three different scenarios, like how drastically different his life is depending on what happens, like whether he catches the train or he doesn't catch the train, or maybe he doesn't catch the train, maybe he like breaks his foot or something. I don't remember, but I haven't seen it, but it's supposedly sort of, this was a huge, that movie was called Blind Chance. It was a Polish movie, 1981, and that was a big influence. So I'm definitely going to be curious to check that movie out.
I'm curious too. It does remind me a little bit about Sliding Doors, mm-hmm. which is a Gwyneth Paltrow movie, where she is running to make the train in London, and in one reality, she makes the train, goes home and discovers her boyfriend's in bed with another woman, breaks up with them and starts a new life. One where she doesn't make the train, gets home late, and doesn't discover. So, okay. But both realities happen simultaneously.
Interesting.
Yeah, it's the old alternative reality.
So it's Sliding Doors?
Sliding Doors, and it's really very well done.
I wonder if that was sort of also influenced by that Blind Chance movie.
Could be. I can't remember when it came out, but it's a terrific story because, like Lola, awareness sort of seeps through both of them. Because in the beginning, she meets a guy who says, well, you know what Monty Python says. And she says, always look on the bright side of life or something. He's like, no one expects the Spanish Inquisition. And this is the guy that she meets, you know, in one reality. In the other reality, at the end, she's on an elevator with him. And she's meeting him for the first time. And he says that same line, but she responds with, no one expects the Spanish Inquisition.
Okay. Interesting. So does she, like, end up with him or something at
the end? Well, they freeze it there. You know, they end it there. So you think, maybe she's going to have the situation we saw in the other reality. But the interesting thing about the movie is that they really are both happening at the same time, which is why the bleed through is interesting, which makes you think about all those other connections that you have where you think, well, you know, how did I know that? Or how did I guess that? Or
Do you happen to know who directed that movie, Sliding Doors?
I can look it up.
Okay, sure.
Super fast while you're asking me another question.
So, I'd like to talk a little bit about Tom Tykwer as a director. Now, this is the only film of his I've seen. I've seen it quite a few times, but I haven't seen any of those other movies. I know most recently he co-directed that Cloud Atlas movie I haven't seen with the Wachowskis, and I know I think he's a good friend of theirs. But have you ever seen Cloud Atlas? Because that's a film like some people say is a masterpiece, other people say it's pretentious crap.
I tried to get through the book, and I couldn't get through the books. When they made a movie out of it, and I knew it was this director, I thought, well, he's certainly going to make it watchable. And it had Tom Hanks and Halle Berry and all these people in it. Totally unwatchable. Really? But I think I just don't get the story the way other people do, because I know some people really, really love that book. But I don't think the movie did very well, even with all that star power. But what he has done that is fantastic, but extremely weird, is a movie called Perfume, The Story of a Murderer, which came out in 2006. And I used to be able to stream this in my class. They could, you know, you could watch Lola and then they could watch this. And it is all in English. It's stars Dustin Hoffman. I mean, it's got lots of people in it, you know. Alan Rickman.
Oh, wow.
But it's this weird little story about this guy who has such a pronounced sense of smell that he decides that he wants to distill the most beautiful essence that he can. So he ends up murdering 12 women to steal their essence. I mean, he has to go there, right?
Oh, okay.
But what makes the movie astonishing is because it's about smell, he shoots it in a way that shows all these things that have strong smells, you know, like piles of dead fish heads or sewage.
Ooh, okay.
And then suddenly, like a whole truck full of plums.
Hmm.
Or a whole basket full of flowers. All these images that make you feel like you're smelling whatever he's showing you.
That's interesting.
But you can't because it doesn't work that way.
Yeah.
But it's so vivid, you really do feel like you're smelling it. And since I think he's really good at those sensory things, you know, like Lola screaming in the movie, mm-hmm. you know, getting the sound even more extreme. And, you know, the use of touch, which I've never seen anybody do before. I just think Perfume's a really cool movie to watch for that. Plus, it has something to say about celebrity. So really, that's a movie we should probably discuss on this show.
Celebrity?
But weird. No, Perfume, that movie. Very, very weird. And I saw Hologram for a King, which came out.
Yeah, with Tom Hanks.
Yeah.
It's a Tom Hanks movie, yet it was like not talked about at all this year.
Yeah, it's a really entertaining Tom Hanks movie, but there's nothing going on, interestingly, director-wise, that would make you go, hey, that's got to be that Lola guy. Because it doesn't have that immediacy. It's not that fast-paced. It's not experimental. It doesn't do any of those things. It's a straightforward story. It's a good story. It's got good stars. But directing-wise, there's nothing about it that makes you go, wow, look what he's doing now. It's just a good, solid movie.
Yeah, no, I know. It's interesting because going back to what you said about Cloud Atlas, it seems like that's sort of the, like I said, the response. Like people either think it's great, brilliant, or people think, oh, it's just a bunch of crap.
Well, I wouldn't say it was crap. I would say that I didn't get it.
Okay. And so anything else that I haven't covered, brought up that you want to talk about now?
Well, it's significant that her name is Lola because the Oscars in Germany, when you win the Oscar, you get a Lola. That's what they call their statuette. So there's a lot of Lola going on in movies, and I think most of the time it's meant to evoke that and you know, the old Jacques Demy Lola, all the Marlene Dietrich, all the Lola stuff. There's a lot of Lola.
The Kinks.
Yeah. Yes. Also, I did want to mention that Franka Potente couldn't wash her hair for 7 weeks.
Yep, I remember that.
To make sure the red stayed in it. I think that must have been really difficult to go 7 weeks of filming without ever being able to wash her hair. Also, the shot where the roulette ball lands on 20 was not a trick shot. They just lucked out.
Oh, really?
And they were shooting. And there's a lot of 20s. So she hits 20 on, you know, when she's gambling, she bets on 20. The first and last story lasts 20 minutes. 20 minutes is the time she has to get the money. So lots of 20s going on.
Okay. And then I do want to also talk about sort of how this film has a lot of, you know, talked about earlier, that it's funny. It has good comedy in it. Like, I always crack up when she has, like, this supersonic scream that every time she screams, like, something breaks, like glass or a clock. And, you know, the thing that cracks me up is those little freeze frames of everybody's different life. Like the woman that either becomes a baby napper, a lottery winner, or a nun.
Or a nun.
Or even that couple that fall in love at the bank. And it shows them falling in love, and there's just this random picture of them in bondage outfits.
Yes. Yeah, and even the end, what's in the bag? You know, that's funny.
Yeah, and then at the very, yeah, it's funny because, and you hear that the shutter frame about to start, and you're thinking, oh, we're going to get a little picture of them. We don't see it.
Yep. Yeah. Yep. The other thing worth noting, not that I'm a runner, but I understand from people who are, that her form is very good.
Mm-hmm. The amount of distance she has to run in a short time, like she must have incredible lung capacity or something.
Yes.
I just knowing me that I'd be like, probably I would, if I ran, I probably wouldn't go farther than like outside the apartment complex. I'd be like, I'm just going to take a bus or something.
Well, like I said, it would take me 20 minutes just to drive to the bank.
Yeah. Okay, so then I guess another thing. Just tell us a little bit how you bring this into your class. You talked a little bit, but tell us a little bit more about that.
Well, with German film, there's so much to talk about because you have expressionism, which you have to talk about. And then you have to talk a little bit at least about World War II and Leni Riefenstahl. And then you want to talk about, you know, post-war new German cinema. It's a lot to get in there. So mm-hmm. I have them watch Caligari, you know, to see mm-hmm. what expressionism looks like. And, you know, compare it to Tim Burton.
Burton, and
I always say, you know, in terms of, you know, trying to get your head around expressionism, just think of it as, you know, in the high school of cinema, the expressionist is the goth kid.
Yeah, they're perfect.
But all that stuff's so historical and significant. And I show them something from M, too, you know, one of the very first. Mm-hmm. And it's a serial killer movie at that. So I show them all this old stuff. But, you know, when you try to think of a really good contemporary German movie, can you think of something that's been out in the last 5 years that you thought was so compelling that you would use it for your class?
Last five? Oh, I did see a movie. It was called, it's Guess Who's Back or Look Who's Back. Have you seen it?
No.
It's basically the story of, like, it's based on a novel, but Hitler wakes up. And he comes back to modern time, modern Germany. And basically, he meets this guy who's a press agent or something. And so he goes on all these tours. But no, everybody thinks he's like an impersonator or something. But people in Germany like him so much. They think he has this great personality and he starts running for political office. And
Next thing you know.
Yeah. And that's an interesting movie. And it wasn't last 5 years, but it came out in 2006. Have you seen The Lives of Others?
Yes.
I think that's one of the best German films, I think, definitely the past few years. And then another one, this was 2003. Have you seen Goodbye, Lenin?
Yes, that's a good one, too.
So I think those are some, 21st century German movies. I would say those three were definitely worth checking out.
And there was The White Ribbon, which was nominated. But it's very Nathaniel Hawthorne. All those movies that you mentioned, they're all good movies, but I don't know that they are representative enough of what's being done. And I can't name the directors of each one of those. But Tom Tykwer, I can say, look, here's something that he's done. And also, here's things he's already doing. So when you see his name, you know, you actually know something about that director. But for a while, I would I used The Counterfeiters, even though it's Austrian.
Okay.
Because it's such a really cool movie. But again, it was too much Holocaust. You know, we already had Life is Beautiful. It tends to dilute the message a little bit when students feel like, oh, again, you know, uh-huh. same story.
I just remembered another movie. I just watched this a month ago. It came out 2 years ago. I'm 99% sure it's German. It's called Phoenix.
Uh-huh.
Ever heard of it? Really good. It's a Holocaust movie, but I'm not going to get into too much. But this woman, she's with her friend, she's severely disfigured. Her face is, she's in bandages and everything. She's a Holocaust survivor. And so she comes back, she gets her face reconstructive surgery, and she's sort of looking for her husband who was taken away from him. And so she runs into him, but the husband doesn't believe it's her. But he thinks, you look like my wife. And, you know, she's came into a very large inheritance. And so if you can play the wife, we can get a whole lot of money from her and her family. So it's sort of that, but she doesn't know it's her. And it's really, really good. And I'm not going to spoil it too much, but the ending is going to leave you speechless.
I saw this at the Rehoboth Film Festival.
You did see it?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, it's a really good movie. Well, that wraps up this episode of The Armchair Directors. We have been talking about German director Tom Tykwer and his 1998 classic Run, Lola, Run. Don't forget, you can listen to The Armchair Directors every Thursday at 9:30 a.m., Sunday at 2:30 p.m., or anytime at dragondigitalradio.podbean.com under the category Armchair Directors. Professor Westaver, I want to thank you again for coming on the show today.
Thanks for having me.
For The Armchair Directors, I'm your host, Alex Baker, saying the ball is round, a game lasts 90 minutes, everything else is pure theory. Off we go.